40 Game Rule podcast. It starts right now. What is the 40 Game Rule? Don't worry. We'll explain it, but it's on the shore. We're coming from a Chicago focus, but this is really more about all of Major League Baseball. If you have a favorite team, we'll certainly touch on them a little bit during this podcast. Max McDoolin is across from me. He's the other host of On the Shore. He has been published in the Society of American Baseball Research for this exact topic, which is the 40-game rule. And his 40-game rule, Max, I'm not going to take the spotlight. Go ahead and take it away. What does the 40-game rule mean? I mean, it's pretty obvious if you haven't figured it out yet and you're a baseball fan. I don't know. But what does it mean in terms of the odds for a team to make the playoffs, to have a winning season, all that good stuff? Fire away.
Essentially, if you have a losing record right now, your best chance of making the playoffs is 25%. Right. If you have a winning record, 76% of the time, you're going to be a playoff team. And so that's why this rule is so important, because right now, before the deadline, 45 games, 50 games before the trade deadline, you know whether your team should be buyers or should be sellers. You know your team's potential. You know your team's opportunity. And when we're looking at the scope of the league, one of the things that I really enjoy about the 40-game rule is that it's also just a great time to measure where divisions are, right? Because a lot of divisions, we'll see a team that maybe we didn't think was going to pop up in there. But if they've got a winning record at the 40-game mark, arguably they have a chance to win the division, right? The Giants, for example, last year, we thought that that team, you know, they played pretty well. They were interesting, but we're like, ah, you know, it's a shortened season.
So
maybe they're not great.
So it's 25%. Good. So if you have a losing record.
24%.
Have a losing record right now.
Yep.
At the 40-game mark.
Your best chance of making the playoffs.
Most teams are at the 40-game mark right now, May 17th.
Yep.
And your best chance to make the playoffs is 24%.
But again, that's your best. So that's, you know, go find your team with a losing record with the best run differential. They're going to be one of those few teams who are 1-4 who can figure out a way to sneak in. Whereas your teams who have a winning record are at a 76% chance that they're going to make it. 76% of the time, if a team has a winning record right now, they make the playoffs. Example, right now, White Sox, 24-15. It would be a real shock if they missed the playoffs, right? Cubs, maybe a little bit different, right? Mm-hmm. Reds, they're sitting at 19-19. Arguably, for this rule, their next two games could very well dictate the scope of their season. That's one of the things I think is really interesting about this rule, too, is that in my research, 21-19 genuinely is just as valuable as 28-12. Just having a winning record at this point, at this moment, is huge. You've gone through the rotation 8 times, right? Like Luis Castillo, for example, on the Reds. We understand the fact that he's been bad, and it kind of looks like he's not going to get good. He's got 8 starts under his belt. So everyone keeps saying, oh, he's probably going to come around, he's going to come around, he's going to come around. We're 8 games into his start.
So just to, let's recap this broadly before we dive into all the other teams, because I really love this rule. I love its effectiveness. I love statistical significance, okay? So you say there's a 76% chance. You've done your research that in baseball's past, there's a 76% chance that a team will make the playoffs if they have a winning record at this point.
Yep.
So currently there are 16 teams in Major League Baseball with a winning record.
And 14 teams make the playoffs this year.
Is it 14?
It's 7 from each side. 7-7.
Okay. So it's that's 76% of 16 is 12.
Yeah.
So that actually includes your 24% of teams that have a losing record then.
That
fills
yeah,
the gap.
So it does. It absolutely does.
The reason I do that is because people listening to this, you can look at the standings right now, and this rule is actively applying in terms of the statistics. The statistics play out. There are nine teams with a winning record in the American League. There are 7 teams with a winning record in the National League. And if you go across all of Major League Baseball, 76% of these 16 teams we'll make the playoffs, give or take, right? If they at 76% and then 24% of the teams with a losing record, that number matches up with the exact amount of teams that will make the postseason this season. Let's talk about those specific teams and what these specific teams have that could be good indicators of success. I think that at the 40 game rule, before we go into the good teams, right now what I want to do is cross off teams to win the World Series. Cross them off, because we actually have a couple. This is something that I got to give credit to Bill Simmons' podcast. He does this with NFL teams. Every few weeks, they cross one off. Say, this team will definitely not win the Super Bowl. We know that already, even though we're only in week 5. Because we're at the 40-game mark and we really believe in this rule, Max, I think we can confidently go through and cross some teams off. Like the Colorado Rockies. Are we comfortable crossing them off?
Absolutely. Rockies off.
Rockies crossed off.
Tigers off.
Tigers are off. Because of the Pirates situation, I'm Pirates willing to off. Cross them off right now.
Off, absolutely.
So you got the Rockies, the Tigers, the Pirates. Who else did you just say?
Mariners.
Oh, I don't know if we can cross them off yet.
I would cross them off.
I think that
very
I would
I'm very confident in that.
I'm personally comfortable from a sports talk segment crossing them off, but I like that we're doing this rule, so I want to be 100% mathematically confident.
So if we're talking about mathematics, because this is where I think it's interesting, like the Twins are 13-25, but they have a roster and a foundation that there's a world that exists where they could pull a Nationals, right? Like they have depth. They've got a great lineup. Yeah. We know that. They've got a relatively okay rotation.
I wouldn't
have crossed
the Nationals off in that situation.
Exactly, right? So like Twins, I don't want to cross off. The Mariners, who are 21-20 compared to the Twins, 13-25, are not a good team. Like for me, again, so talk show segment, fine. So we're going to talk show. I would cross Mariners off. In a world of math, in a world of 162 games.
Yeah, Kyle Lewis is batting cleanup for the Seattle Mariners.
Exactly.
Right now. So
right? The lineup.
And if
is
you
not
don't know deep. That name, that's totally okay.
Absolutely.
Totally okay. And so mathematically we won't, but sports talk I can agree with.
Same thing. Sports talk, you know what's sad is that the only reason neither of us said Angels is because of Mike Trout.
And Shohei Ohtani is playing like an MVP.
So you've got the two best players in all of baseball on that roster.
Arguably.
And they're 17-22.
Yeah, I would want to cross the Rangers off, but they're still at a -20 run differential. And
Rangers are going to sell, too. We know that. Gallo, that was announced today. So Joey Gallo, who is the best hitter.
Are we comfortable crossing the Rangers off?
Yes. The reason for that is
they got Dane Dunning eating up key innings. I'm not really sure that's a winning situation for the Texas Rangers.
Again, the thing about the Rangers
is I think we can cross the Orioles off too before you go back to the Rangers, because the Orioles would be the last team that I would cross off, and then we can circle back around. For the Orioles, the reason you cross them off is because of the division.
Absolutely.
Like they're not going to even get into fourth place. So no. They're not going to make a wild card. Nothing's going to happen.
They're last now. They will be last at the end of the season.
So we'll put the Orioles. Okay, circle back around to the Rangers.
So what I was going to say about the Rangers was today it was announced that Joey Gallo's on the market. You're talking about your best all-around hitter, who is mostly a power hitter. He's a modern Adam Dunn, right? You know, he strikes out a lot. He walks a good bit. He hits home runs. Tons of power. He has one of my favorite things. Every time Gallo comes to the plate, I feel like whether it's a national broadcast, whether it's the regional broadcast, someone brings up the term light tower power, right? But anyways, long story short, best hitter on the team, on the market, and they're 18-24. Like that's probably an indication that they're not going to be there at the end of the year. I don't think you're trading Joey Gallo for an arm. You're trading Joey Gallo for prospects.
So right? 40 game rule. Let's go all the teams with a winning record at about the 40-game mark, and then let's go the teams we just crossed off to give everybody a nice round recap. Plus, there's a small chance I might have fixed that audio problem we were having earlier. So there's also a tiny chance, I haven't had a chance to edit it yet, there's a tiny chance that this is now the start of the podcast. So we're just going to recap it again. We don't know yet, though. The last 10 minutes could have happened.
It could have.
It could have happened.
But it also could not have.
Yeah. If you're a Chicago sports fan, don't worry. We didn't even talk White Sox at all yet.
Haven't touched them yet.
We're saving that for the end. So here's the 40-game rule. Max has done research. It's been published in SABR. This is published work. And the math works out. I've triple-checked it. He gave me this stuff in college, and I was like, let me check that. Google. It actually makes a lot of sense. The 9 teams in the American League with a winning record right now at 40 games. Boston, Toronto, the Yankees, Tampa Bay, the White Sox, the Indians, the Athletics, the Astros, and the Mariners. The 7 teams in the National League that have themselves a winning record at 40 games. The Mets, the Phillies, the Cardinals, the Brewers in Milwaukee, San Francisco, which, hey, I doubted San Francisco at the start of the 2020 season, and I don't really count the 2020 season. This really feels like the sequel to 2019.
But we've got to stop doubting the Giants.
Evan Longoria is hitting the ball very hard. He should be having better numbers than he already has, and he's half playing like an MVP. And Buster Posey, although he can't play the amount of games that he used to, he's got great numbers, and they just have a weirdly sneaky good lineup. Now, I think it's an old team that's healthy.
Which I kind of like that.
But it's an old team that's healthy, that's playing well early.
Sure.
And Kevin Gausman is eating up a lot of innings.
Yeah.
And he's pitching really well, which is, I mean, it feels like 2010 at the Tampa Bay Rays. And it's just like San Francisco, I'm not sure they're going to make the playoffs, but I can respect them as a 500-plus club now.
It's a profound statement. Okay, and then you got Padres and Dodgers, right?
Yeah, who, you know, those are solid. The teams we're crossing off are the Colorado Rockies. So, Rockies fans, your team will not win the World Series this year. I don't know if that's a shock to you. If it is at this point, I don't know how much you've been watching. So, Rockies are off.
Hey, watch them when they're at home. They're 13-12 at home. They suck on the road.
In terms of 40-game rule, you wouldn't cross the Orioles off except at their situation in their division.
Absolutely.
When you have four teams with a winning record, not just a 21 and you know, the lowest winning record you can have, 21-19 at 40 games, multiple games over that benchmark of 21-19. That's what's in front of the Orioles. So, you can cross them off because they won't make it to fourth in the AL East. And if you can't make it to fourth in your division, you're done in baseball. The Tigers, duh. Pirates, $45 million in payroll, including their minor leagues. Okay. So we can cross them off. And then we just talked about the Rangers. We're crossing them off. You said you would cross the Mariners off if it weren't for your own 40-game rule, and they're 21-20 right now. They were 20-20, so they weren't 21-19. So that's where you're like really a... You're really hard on
I'm hard on it.
If the Mariners had gone one way in one different game in the first 40 games, you'd have a completely different opinion.
I probably would. Absolutely. But I feel like I'm the eye test, one, tells me, okay, cross them off. And then it says, well, they were 20-20. So I'm allowed to.
Yeah.
That's the permission, right? So I think that's interesting. You know, another one that's really interesting to me.
Well, what I wanted to talk, go ahead. Yeah. But where we're going to go after this is to talk about the teams with a losing record.
Sure.
That could potentially break the trend.
Well, and here, we'll lead into that with the NL East. Very interesting division. No one with a sizable lead. It's a half-game lead for the Mets. They have not hit the 40-game mark yet. They're 18-16. Had some COVID issues, so they're kind of behind the league as far as games played. The Phillies, 21-20. Braves, 19-21. Marlins, 18-22. Nationals, 16-20. That division right there, complete toss-up, right? Marlins actually have a sneaky good lineup. One of the things that the Marlins are very good at that we've discussed is probably the new Moneyball version of baseball is not striking out, right? They put balls in play. So that's one thing that the Marlins do well. The Nationals have phenomenal pitching, right? They're 16-20. The numbers would say you should probably cross them off. However, what was their record? I can't remember what they came back from. It was something ridiculous. 19-38.
Yeah, it might have been that.
It was nuts what they came back from to win the World Series. So you definitely can't cross them off. And the other reason you can't cross them off is that there is no team out of those five that feels even good. Like, that's going to be that weird division that someone randomly wins. And pitching feels like, you know, that's a big separator.
There are things you like about all the top three teams. You really like the top line arms for the Mets. You really like some of the bats in the Phillies.
Well, like Lindor is not going to bat 190 all year. Right?
Oh, no.
So that's a great...
I think the Mets are going to win this.
So that's a very good indication for them.
I think the 40-game rule is going to show us that the Mets are going to win this division. Because look, they're only at 18-16.
And they're 7-3 in their last 10.
So they could
So they were 11-13 only 10 games ago.
They could be getting hot and they could really push through and all of a sudden the Mets are the team to beat in the division.
And the other indicator for me is 7-12 on the road, which is reasonable. You know, it's close enough to 500. I know it's five games off, but still, you win two of those, and now you're 9-10 and 11-4 at home. Great teams win a lot of games at home. So that's a good indication for the Mets. So I would definitely, if I, if If I could put a little cheese on someone to win that division, Mets, for sure. Not just because they're in first place right now, but because they got good pitching, they've got a strong bullpen, and they got a good lineup.
Good defense, too. I have a sneaky feeling that the NL MVP is going to come out of that division because I think it's going to be Bryce Harper. If you look at expected batting average, weighted expected on base percentage, if you look at increase in exit velocity, increase in sweet spot contact percentage.
Barrels.
Bryce Harper is all over those lists. He has really, we've seen that with these big contract guys. We've seen this before where that first year or two in that new situation with the new contract that's that big, there's a lot of weight, there's a lot of expectation, there's a lot that changes in your life, there's a lot that changes in your situation and your mentality about it. Because listen, when you get a 10-year contract, I don't care who you are, it's going to affect you.
Especially in a new city.
Yes.
Right? Like Votto was the same player in Cincinnati when he signed his massive deal.
There was a drop-off, there was some ups and downs, but it wasn't due to contract or anything like that. But yes, changing cities, especially.
That when you throw that in, especially pitchers, I think, handle it better, right? Because they're focused less on everything the team does on a daily basis. Whereas hitters, the big thing about hitters is that if the team's not winning, they feel like they have to do
stuff.
It's my job now.
You're an everyday player.
To get
player.
A hit every single time. Whereas pitchers, they could care less, right? Garrett Cole goes to the Yankees and he's like, well, it's the same job I had with the Pirates. It's the same job I had with the Astros.
I get on this mound every fifth day and I strike dudes out.
Exactly. End of story. But hitters, it's like, oh my gosh, we've lost the last five and I have one hit, right? Pressure's on, right? You're a part of the reason that the team is losing.
Especially when the team you left
wins the World Series.
So I think that he harnessed that event, whatever happened. He's moved on from these past
struggles.
Feels
very NBA drama-esque with the Bryce Harper
story. And Bryce
story.
Harper is that type of diva that NBA drama is a good little line for him.
Well, think about Bryce Harper. The first time he's on national television, he gets plunked. Well, no, I'm talking about it in Major League Baseball. He gets plunked by Cole Hamels. He steals second base after being plunked, and then he scores on what was considered a stolen base of home, but the reason it was a stolen base is because Hamels threw over to first, and Harper takes off and scores, right? He's a diva. He wanted. He decided that that moment, right, he was going to punish the pitcher, and he did it.
Well, there's no that's you normally the result when you're hitting 540-foot bombs at 15 years old. I'd say that most of those guys end up being pretty cocky.
I think most baseball players
when you're on the cover
general.
Of, but especially that type of baseball
yes,
player.
Absolutely.
Where just, I mean, it was unbelievable.
It's a Jordan Kobe mentality, which is why I compare it to the
how
NBA.
Old is Bryce Harper? What's his age right now? Take a guess while I look it up.
27. I think he's played 8
28.
Years. Oh, I just missed it.
28. So when Bryce Harper was 15, that means I was 10. My dad was telling me about him and like, oh, he's so good. Look at this footage. Oh my gosh, look at this. That's what Bryce Harper's been since I was 10 years old. And so he's been a figure for 18 years in baseball.
It's interesting that...
Well, for 13 years in baseball, he's been a figure.
It's interesting that that's one of your memories because the memory I just shared, one of the things that made it so significant for me was that I also shared that with my dad. We were sitting there watching and he loved it. He's like, oh, this kid just got plunked.
My
He's
dad
like,
bought, what?
We
my
watched
dad,
that live, right? He's going to steal second. He's going to take third. He's going to score, right? And he loved it because if you're going to be that cocky and that confident, then you have to back it up. And that's one thing Harper has always done.
He's
right?
got an MVP award. He's I think not, he's backed it up.
Yeah,
he's
and
backed
he's,
it up.
And he doesn't. He's not a 300 hitter, but he knows who he is. He's a great outfielder, you know, and he can hit 250 and still change a game
really, I think,
twice a week.
I think the Nationals made a mistake, not for the longevity and the benefit of Bryce Harper's hitting statistics, but I think the kid would have been a generational defensive catcher. Because if you go watch him at 15, 16 years old behind the plate, it was the best arm I have ever seen from anybody up to through college ranks from behind the dish. And he was doing it at 15.
You know, one of the things that's crazy about Harper, and then we'll get back into these other teams, but the weird thing about Harper, too, is that it still feels like he can't meet expectations, right? He still doesn't feel like he's as good as he is. And he is. He's as good as he ever needs to be. But most of us in baseball think, Harper, he's good. Is he an all-star? Is he an MVP? Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But we kind of forget it.
Because the expectations are so high. Exactly. This is what would have happened, ladies and gentlemen, if LeBron James had kind of fallen off a little bit. He would have been dissed and disrespected and put to the side, no matter how good he was, in the middle of his career at 28. Instead, at 28, LeBron was playing his best basketball, and he kept ascending and kept ascending and kept ascending. So we're kind of finding out a little bit of different of a sport, but very similar circumstances.
Absolutely. The analogy,
similar circumstances. Yeah. So I think that this is what would have happened if randomly in the middle of LeBron's career, Bryce Harper left for Philadelphia at the same time, at the same age that LeBron left for Miami. So that, this is, if LeBron would
after
have left.
After not bringing a title, to which Cleveland. He wanted to, LeBron wanted to bring a title to Cleveland, couldn't. Harper, the Nationals were horrible forever.
Oh, yeah, they were the laughingstock. Then him, and in baseball, it was a bunch of other pieces as well. But LeBron and Bryce Harper show up, and now the team is relevant, and all of a sudden they're there. They can't win it, so they leave. Now imagine if in LeBron's situation, the Cavaliers won the title the next year, like Dan Gilbert said in that letter. Much different story for Bron. I don't think Michael Jordan is too worried about the GOAT conversation if that had happened.
No.
So there would be a lot of criticism.
But again, that's the thing about baseball, and that's the thing about all these teams that we're going to get into right now, is that it's not about a single player.
No.
It's about the roster makeup. And that's why, for example, you don't feel so confident about the Giants. It's aging players. It's not a strong roster. It's nothing on paper that we think says World Series, right? Whereas you look at Astros, World Series,
yeah,
right? On paper, that
team
looks
really good.
Well, look
at the Dodgers.
Really
the Dodgers' biggest problem right now in terms of being a consistent winner is they don't have enough depth because they had so many frontline injuries.
Absolutely.
But they're still a solid baseball team, 4-1 in the last week. Still a solid baseball team because they went through their injuries, and now they're kind of formulated like a Cincinnati Reds or a mid-market team like a Cleveland Indians, where they have decent starting lineup, but they're very thin. And that can be a problem in a lot of games. That can be a problem maintaining winning streaks like that. Atlanta is this team that's coming off the NLCS as we turn to the teams with a losing record at the 40-game mark, Max. I think Atlanta is the team you can just pencil in. You're going to have to find an NL team to cross off here of the winners and put Atlanta in. I think Atlanta is certainly going
to Well, and I think one of the easiest teams to probably cross off is going to be NL Central. I think that it's very likely that the NL Central has one playoff team. You know, I think it's going to be a division winner. So I don't have a lot of faith in
the
Brewers.
And it's going to be the Cardinals.
I don't have a lot of faith in the Reds. And I have no faith in the Cubs because we know they're going to sell. And the Pirates are a dumpster fire.
It's the Cardinals.
The Pirates are like the 2010 Cleveland Browns. They are like, we know it's a dumpster fire.
And it's going to get worse.
And
that's the problem. We know it's going to get worse.
And I can even say that because I worked for the Pirates and I saw it firsthand. Like, and here's the thing, crazy thing about the Pirates, great at developing talent. I mean, think about the names in baseball. Garrett Cole, that's one. Mark Melanson, Andrew McCutchen.
I saw that dude pitch for the Pirates. I watched his debut.
Starling Marte.
And I was like, they're going to trade this guy.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. They're going to trade this absolute monster stud.
Isn't that just sad? At some point, you got to pay someone.
Whatever. I don't want to talk about them.
Yeah, neither
we crossed them off.
But here's the interesting thing. Again, we love the Dodgers on paper, but what does that mean for the Giants and the Padres, who are 24-16 and 24-17? And one of the most profound numbers, there's two big numbers in baseball that are rarely hit as far as winning percentage goes, and that's 60% of the time. Winning games 60% of the time. That means you are an elite team. Right? You are winning at a clip that's much higher than anyone in the rest of the sport. 60% of the time is 97 wins. That's or 98, whatever. It's 97, it's 98 wins. The San Francisco Giants are the only team in baseball with a winning percentage that even is close to 60% of the time. Sorry, Red Sox are right there as well.
And the White Sox.
And the White Sox.
The White Sox have the best record in baseball.
My bad.
We should not be forgetting this.
We should definitely not forget that.
That is our favorite storyline of the year, we are getting
to. That's why I was forgetting it, because we're holding off on it until later. I didn't want to touch it now. But that's the thing I think is so interesting, is that in the NL West, I think of those three teams of Giants, Padres, Dodgers, the first two that would roll off your tongue as, oh yeah, they're going to compete for the division, are going to be Padres and Dodgers. But the Giants have the best winning percentage in all of baseball. And it's a question, like you said, how can they keep it up when they have such an aging lineup? They're going to be susceptible to injury and not a super strong rotation. And I think that's going to be an interesting question, because last year might have been an example of, oh, we didn't take the Giants seriously because they could stay healthy in a shortened season. What happens 30 games from now? So that's going to be the team that I'm going to be really keeping an eye on until the All-Star break. I think that's going to be really interesting. What does durability do with that team compared to others?
I look through the standings here, Max. Atlanta's the only team I'm looking at with a losing record at the 40-game mark that I'm in, even close to comfortable saying is going to make the playoffs.
Angels, though, I mean, are
no,
possible.
No, I've seen them. I'm not going to do that to myself again. No, like, seriously, it's the same crap. They can't figure it out. Well, you got to, this is unbelievable. You had the best player in a generation from another country coming over here. He picked your team, which has the greatest player of a generation on it, and you've gotten him 4 playoff at-bats.
Well, and one of the worst things about the Angels, and I've talked about this year in and year out, Mitchell Lyons, a friend of ours, him and I have talked about it a ton. The Angels, it's almost grotesque because they spend money. And they, they're not spending money.
Yeah, they're not trying, I mean.
Right, but here's the issue. They decide to have an average rotation year in and year out, and they think that that's fine. And it's like, no, you have an elite offense, but do you know what the team across town has? An elite offense and an elite rotation. Yep. Do you know what the World Series winners have? At a minimum, they have a couple elite starters and an elite bullpen. And can you name one pitcher on the Angels other than Shohei Ohtani off the top of your head?
No, and the only reason I know Ohtani is because he's a hitter.
Right. And so that's what the Angels do wrong.
It's the only reason they liked him as a frontline arm, because he could hit too.
I just convinced myself to cross the Angels off. Like, unless they had an arm, cross them off the list. No, it's just, they're not there. They won't be there. They're a poorly run organization. I'll go on a really big tangent real quick.
Well, when you look at the Los Angeles, the hilarious thing is that their history of when they've had a lot of success.
Bartolo Colon won a Cy Young there, right?
Yeah. And then
won a World Series on that team. That was the World Series team.
The World Series team was 02. I believe Bartolo was on that team. But that team's run kind of ended when they lost the ALCS to the Sox in 2005. Which, the lovely fact that Ozzie Guillen made one pitching change in a 5-game series. Starters pitched 44 and a third of the 45 innings for the Chicago White Sox that year. Absolutely unbelievable. But the last time the last time they made the playoffs, the last time they won a playoff game, Max, do you know who their best player was?
Hang on. I know it. It's right on the top of my tongue. Hold on. Oh, shoot. Tell me.
Sean Figgins, actually. And Sean. Jared Weaver. Sean, oh my gosh, I messed that up.
Come on, Figgins.
There were a lot of good Angels teams here, actually, looking through the encyclopedia here at the beginning of the
2010s. I was thinking of Bobby Abreu.
Jared Weaver. I mean, they just had better frontline arms. I guess they're kind of looking at the Jared Weaver, because was Jared Weaver ever elite? No. 2.56 was his best year. 2.41. That's elite.
That's elite. That's definitely elite. He won a Cy Young, didn't he? Scroll.
I got it right here. Hold on. Google. Did Jared Weaver win a Cy Young? No, I don't think so. Mm. 3-time All-Star. No Cy Young.
Did his brother win a Cy Young?
I don't know. I'm not going to look it up, though, because we got to talk about the White Sox.
Well, you start talking about the White Sox while I look up if either of the Weavers want to sign Young.
So we saved our favorite part of the podcast for last because our favorite part of this Major League Baseball season for Max and I is the Chicago White Sox. This is all I wanted to do when I moved here was go to these games.
Because Jeff Weaver never received a vote for Cy Young.
Okay, great. Because when I moved here, Max, you had already had a summer in 2019 of going to the White Sox games, and I was excited for the summer of 2020 to go to Cubs games, go to White Sox games, to live in a city that has baseball. I've never had that experience in my life. I grew up to where a baseball game was the same effort as a football game.
It was an hour away.
It was an hour and a half because of traffic. Plus, you'd have to find parking in the city, mile walk to the stadium. Your dad's complaining about money. And then you got to, like, you can only have one food. Like, it's just a mess. And it's so different from walking down the street or hopping on the red line and going to a baseball game and being home at a good time. And it's just a completely different experience.
Well, the Cubs are literally in your backyard.
Yeah, and
they'll be in my backyard here shortly.
And I was excited for it, and 2020 did what it did, and it took it from us. But that makes me doubly excited for 2021. It tripled, quadrupled, quintupled the emotions of going to baseball games. And the fact that the first game you and I went back to was a Carlos Rodon no-hitter.
That was awesome.
I mean, the first baseball game you go back to after a pandemic is a no-hitter. You know that's a good sign for you liking a baseball team. Plus, I just keep having this like weird dream of this old White Sox helmet I used to have from when I took a field trip in eighth grade to the city of Chicago. You believe this? All these people listening to this podcast, you live here. You grew up here. Your family grew up this is just a city. This is just where you're from. My family and our school and a bunch of families in our school saved money throughout the year for the end of the year final school trip to visit this city. And I think that is just in a way ironic and cool. And the fact that I had a White Sox helmet. So I've just been having these weird like White Sox visions. I need gear. I need a lot of gear and I need it now.
They saved enough for a White Sox game. But not enough.
Yeah, we only went to a Sox game because they couldn't get good tickets to Wrigley.
I really think that that's quite interesting because
you know what we did? We walked by Wrigley. We came by, we looked at it. This is Wrigley Field. Now let's go to the White Sox game because we're in eighth grade, poor school from Ohio. Like
but this is why you and I love the White Sox, because they are the blue collar team, right? Their players are blue collar. They play with a chip on their shoulder. Jose Abreu, right, you know, the other day gets taken out by Dozier on whatever, Bush League play. And he's saying to La Russa in between the doubleheader, I want to play in game two. And he's like, no, you cannot. But Abreu is still going to say, yes, I want to. And they didn't play him, but I love that. Right? You've got guys who want to play every day. They have a chip on their shoulder.
And La Russa, he's come in and they made him loose. And now, hey, have fun. Because the chip is already there with all these guys. Adam Eaton has a chip. These guys all have chips. So what you don't want to do with a team full of guys that already have chips on their shoulder is go in there and be like, oh, we need a chip on our shoulder. And this is going to be, because it's 162 games.
It's a
long march. You got to be relaxed.
It's very similar to Dusty in Chicago, right? It was with the Cubs. And it's probably part of the reason why Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa hate each other so much, because they're very similar. Their players love them. You know, they don't toy with the lineup the way that all these other managers do. They're very traditional. They're very basic. They have relationships. They have feelings. It's why people thought Albert might come to play for the White Sox, just to play for La Russa again, right? Because he's so good with players. And I think that this feeds into one of our podcasts earlier. I said, don't worry, right? Don't worry about Tony. It's fine. They're 25-14. I think that's proven itself, right? La Russa lost him a couple of games. Absolutely. I don't know if he's won them games yet. But you can't fault a guy when the team is 25-14. You're probably doing something right, right? Okay. And the number one thing that he's doing right,
especially
is pushing,
with the circumstances,
he's pushing no one's buttons. Every move that he does makes sense, right? Not necessarily pitching moves in the middle of the game. Sometimes that's kind of a headache. or trying to do a double switch or putting a pitcher out on second base to run.
Bunting when I just wouldn't. You know, I'm not against it, but also I was just, right. I don't know.
But when he submits that lineup, the injuries, whatever is going on, you look at it and go, yeah, that makes sense. I would do that. Yeah, that works. That looks good. Oh, we got a win. Oh, we got another win. Oh, he must be doing something right. Oh, that's a weird lineup. Oh, they still won, right? Like, he hasn't done anything significantly wrong at the start of a game. He's done some dumb things in a game.
He said a lot of dumb stuff after the game, too.
Well, but no, but you know what? That's the other thing that I credit him for, is that he's admitted it, right? He's admitted the mistakes he's made, which I think makes the players appreciate him even more, because we talk about this a lot. You definitely believe this. We fault managers way too much, right? Like, oh my gosh, why'd he bring in that guy there? Because he gets rocked. Instead of saying like, geez, that guy got rocked. Like he did something wrong. No, it's the manager's fault. He brought in the wrong guy in the wrong spot. And that's what's great about La Russa, is that he would say, I brought in the wrong guy. I made the wrong decision. Never blaming the players, never blaming the team. And that allows them to stay loose. It allows them to just focus on, okay, it's whatever. What I do in this moment, it's important, but at the same time, yeah, I'm here to win a ball game.
And that's important for a manager to do that, and a manager should always do that. And a manager in baseball is always players first. If you cannot put your players in the right position, communicate with them so that they're relaxed throughout a 162-game season, then you shouldn't be in the job. And I don't want an analytics monkey down there just punching buttons and saying and doing, like, no, I need a human being that's able to connect with people, like a Dusty Baker, right? Like a Luis Rojas in New York. I really think that
like
they're
an Ozzie Guillen when he was here.
Oh yeah, Ozzie Guillen, the ALCS, 44 1/3 innings of his starters, one pitching change. One time that guy got up off the bench to pull his pitcher from the mound. One time, you know, and he knew when it was time to shut up. He knew when it was time to let his players play. And Tony La Russa did such a good job of that in St. Louis, right? He's done such a good job of that in his history, when the players need to play. And Dusty Baker does an amazing job of that through the 162-game march. The problem is, and the big difference between Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa, is Tony La Russa keeps the same attitude from August to September to October and on to the World Series championship. And Dusty, after the Bartman incident, especially, has every time he's been in the postseason, has pressed. He's pressed his coaches. He's pressed his team. He's pressed his strategy. He's pressed his pitchers. He's changed the way he manages in the playoffs. And that's why he hasn't had results in the postseason. Because baseball is a game where you need to be. Basketball, if you're a basketball coach, the number one your goal is to make your team think they are the greatest collection of talent that there's ever been while playing great defense and with good effort. If you can strike that balance, that's the perfect basketball team. In baseball, you need a team that's relaxed, that does not care about failure, that's okay with striking out once in a while. Why? Because this game's really hard. And with football, you need a tactician who's able to outsmart the other guy and somebody that knows when to let guys go and murder people on the other side of the ball. That's what I want in football.
And the interesting thing about that is that all of the different styles you just discussed, they can be successful managers in baseball. But like you said, in order to succeed in the playoffs, it takes the mentality that La Russa has. Because Madden is a great tactician, but he just could never cross over the bridge in the playoffs with the Rays, right? And then he got to Chicago, and what was the great thing about Chicago? It was relaxed. It was just, it's a bunch of really good ball players. It's a, you know, I don't need to do anything.
Team.
I don't need to do anything. I'm here. I set the lineup. You play. You don't. It's over. And now we see him with the Angels running into the same problem. He's a great tactician, good lineup, but just it's messy. Right?
And it's always about talent. Again, it's always about players. And listen, as a manager, I'll always take blame. I've been a manager before. If I send a kid out there and he gets rocked, I will tell the kid, hey, I probably shouldn't have put you in that situation. Maybe put you whatever. I'll take the blame. But this is a message to all players out there. And if you have anybody that is a nephew or something or a child that's going to be a player, If your kid or a kid you're coaching or somebody comes up to you and says these words, I got rocked because the manager shouldn't have put me in. You need to yell at them, okay? You need to say, you what? No, you were the one pitching.
Well, it's like in tennis. You know, I coach tennis, and I see kids all the time, right, who get upset that their competition is better. And they're mad at me for putting them on court with the same person.
That's one of the
and
issues.
And it's like, no, you lost and you failed and you did not play well enough. And it's not my fault that...
Athletics is about striving to be better. That is the entire point of athletics. It's leisure time. It's fun. But it's about trying to be better
and
in the moment.
And not everything is going to be competitive. It's not.
No.
And sometimes, like, I prefer a kid who loses and loses well, right? Like, he comes up to me, he's like, oh my gosh, I got my ass kicked, and this is what I did wrong. This is what I want to do better. This is what I want to work on next time we're on court with each other, right? And all of those different things. But again, in baseball, the narrative that gets created is oftentimes that the manager did something wrong, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing that that's the narrative. In other sports, maybe not. Right. I think that you need to be self-driven. But there's 25 highly egotistical guys, or what is it now? 26? 26 man.
Yeah, 26.
You got 26 guys and
might have been 27 this year for weird rules, whatever.
I think it's 26, but it doesn't matter. The point is that you've got 26 egos and you have to facilitate them all. And it's okay to take the fall. And La Russa is really good at taking the fall while getting zero credit right now for 25-14 White Sox team.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't need the credit.
People think that they're 25-14 despite La Russa at this point, which that narrative
despite,
needs to end.
And despite injuries and despite, well, you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
Say it.
Do you think that the North Side slanted media in this city, which is fair, extremely fair, more than obviously fair. I would not. I mean, name me a sports media member that lives past 35th Street in this city. I'm not 100% sure.
We're also not on that list. We're on the North Side.
We're on the North Side. I'm not saying that either. But what I'm saying is that this guy, who is the number one rival of a manager that was decently liked in this city, specifically by the media, in Dusty Baker in the early 2000s.
That's actually a good point.
This manager who was the number one manager of the rival team of the Chicago Cubs, which most of these guys who tend to live on the North Side tend to go to more Cubs games and tend to have a better experience covering the Cubs. So they've never liked Tony La Russa. So now the South Side team hires this guy that they never really liked, never really enjoyed covering. And he gets a DUI before the season, and it's fresh meat. He also has the largest gap any manager has ever had since, like, Jim Riggleman, who came off as a bench coach in the middle of the season for the Nationals in Major League history. He's 76 years old. It just was this collection of fresh red meat that it was so easy to so harshly criticize off the jump for everybody that covers Chicago sports teams in the city. It was so easy to criticize off the jump that they criticized it so heavily that it's going to take a lot more wins for them to backpedal that opinion, which is fair. And again, none of this is an attack on them. It's just everybody has a natural bias when we do this job. Anybody that doesn't is lying to you, right? Anybody that doesn't have bias is lying to you. And so I think that there were just some natural biases that come into play specifically for Tony La Russa, specifically in the city of Chicago, and specifically with the situation both the Cubs and White Sox are currently in, that it makes it a little harder for all these reporters and all these sports talk guys to really draw back their Tony La Russa hot takes that they made in February about how they should have fired him the day after the DUI came out. Which, again, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with. It's just going to be hard for them to walk that back.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing about La Russa that I think you make a really valid point about. That Dusty Baker rivalry, I think, is technically ingrained, right? I mean, this the media that has been here and has been here for a long time believes that those were really good teams, really exciting teams. And then they watch Dusty still manage in the National League Central, right? He's the manager of the Cubs, rival is the Cardinals. He's the manager of the Reds, rival is the Cardinals, right? It feels almost like anyone who plays in the AFC North, right? Everyone hates the Steelers because they've been really good. They won a lot of championships. They win the division every year, right? If you asked a Browns fan, who's your biggest rival?
Steelers.
If you asked a Bengals fan, Steelers. Who's your biggest rival? Ravens fan.
Steelers.
Right? If you ask anyone in the NL Central,
ask who's the Bills, Jets, and Dolphins, who their biggest rival is.
Exactly. And now ask the Cubs, who's your biggest rival?
Cardinals.
Reds, who's your biggest rival?
Cardinals.
Pirates, who's your biggest rival? Reds, that's a different story.
But
Brewers, who's your biggest rival?
The Cubs.
Right. And so almost everyone, the Pirates don't even deserve to be in the conversation.
The Brewers, the only reason the Brewers and Cubs is that hot of a rivalry is because of the proximity of the
Absolutely.
Stadiums and the fact that all those poor season ticket holder Brewers fans have to deal with half their friends selling their seats to rich Northsiders who want to make the hour and a half drive and get some really good seats
that
at
was
a much
a hot
better
take.
Price
that was a hot
at Miller
take.
Park.
But imagine that's
no,
what
No, but that
we,
happens. It's like half-capacity Cubs fans
well,
at
it's
Miller
what,
Park.
But it's what we grew up with in Cincinnati.
With the Steelers.
My first... No, with the Reds and Cubs.
Oh,
my
Cubs first, Cubs do that in everywhere. The Cubs are everywhere, man.
But still, not just everywhere, especially the Midwest.
Yes.
If it's drivable and it's $20 a ticket, look, right now, for example, the get-in price for the Cubs game tonight is $65. If I want to get a really great seat, all you can eat. It's $500. All you can eat, all you can drink. You can get the same seat for $150 down in Cincinnati. All you can eat, all you can drink. Then you throw in a hotel, right? And you still haven't spent the $500 that it costs, right? So anyways, they take over that stadium too. And again, it's fun. It's exciting. It's all that good stuff. But that's what feeds into the rivalry. Right? The Cubs are the big
but
time
then,
rivals.
And then Milwaukee, too. A lot of people from Milwaukee come down to Chicago.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people from Chicago to Milwaukee.
But, anyways, to summarize the tangent, though, at the end of the day, you know, it's more about what the White Sox are doing on the South Side and the fact that they're winning and the fact that La Russa is there and is making a big difference. And he was a rival for the Cubs for countless years. And now he is doing something impressive in this city. For an organization that has the most forgotten World Series win in the history of baseball, right? Like everyone, it's so bad.
You know, Tony La Russa feels like an unpopular president right now.
Absolutely.
With a roaring economy where everybody's like, So, and the next scandal that pops up, the next mistake he makes,
we're going to be all over it.
I'm going to read 7 columns about it.
Absolutely.
Everybody's going to want to rip him. And that's the thing is that he's just been such an easy target early in the season. And listen, I'm a guy that writes like I love attacking coaches when they make mistakes. I've done it before. I'll do segments. Don't worry, I'll post videos this year attacking people. That's fine, right? This is sports journalism. It's supposed to be a little confrontational.
Absolutely.
That's what makes it entertaining, right? That's what makes it sports.
Absolutely.
Right?
It's Bill Parcells calling the media into the Giants and saying, we're going to be here for 6 hours while I talk.
I just think that we covered La Russa. Just because the guy is an a-hole, in your opinion, doesn't mean he's a bad baseball manager.
Also, again, I want to make it abundantly clear that I was very positive La Russa from the start.
Yeah, oh yeah. I was kind of neutral. Like, the DUI thing, like, I was like, okay. Like, he's 76. It's probably bad. I don't know. How do the players... Do you think the players care?
No.
Because I've been around baseball players.
Look at what Ohio did with Frank Solich. Solich got a DUI. He's fine.
He's been there longest tenured head coach.
I almost had one. It is what it is. Just get out and walk a straight line. No, but don't drink and drive, just for the record.
Yeah,
no, but again, that's not an indication of who you are as a manager and also who you are as a person, which I respect the White Sox for that as well. Because again, he has clearly been a good figure, a good leader for this White Sox team, and he's getting better. As the days go by, he's getting better.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Also, the media in this city still hates Jerry Reinsdorf for kind of ruining the whole Michael Jordan thing. That should have had another 3-4 years to it.
They're a little nicer to Bartman, at least.
Yeah, because, oh my gosh. All right, the Bartman thing was way before my time in this city, but that is the most despicable thing this city has ever done to anybody. And Chicago should be more ashamed of the Bartman incident than, frankly, the mafia.
We've now reached the tangent section
right?
of today's podcast.
The poor guy was had a Walkman on. He just wanted to catch a foul ball. And you guys made him change his identity. His identity. If you're sitting in
it's
the...
It's not good when you got to go into the witness protection program just for catching a foul ball.
Yeah.
It's a bad thing. Very bad.
Yeah. I'm glad nobody on that team was a part of the team that finally won the World Series.
I don't know if that segment is going to make the podcast, but if it does, fair enough.
I liked it.
That's
I think that most Chicagoans would agree with
we
that.
We should have him on a podcast. That
you're not
going to
find him. No way. No way. We got a better shot of getting Matt Nagy on.
Challenge accepted.
I'll try to get Matt Nagy.
You try to get
Steve Bartman. If we have them both... Great pod.
Let's meet in the middle and have Bastian.
So why do you guys think the city just hates you so much?
Reinsdorf needs a championship, man.
Yeah.
He needs one badly.
It's going to happen. No worries.
I think this year it will.
If it does.
I think the White Sox, that's my thing. That's my lock. I would be shocked if the White Sox don't win the World Series this year. I'm being honest.
I would say I would be shocked. The thing I would be shocked if the White Sox don't do is win the division.
That would be very shocking.
In fact, if they...
I would hope that meant that they had a litany of injuries and that the Indians
if they don't
made
win
a
the,
trade.
If they don't win the AL Central, that better have been due to a second COVID wave, okay? Like that is just cannot happen. This division is a weakened gazelle that's just been shot in the leg. And the White Sox are a lion.
Well, this is why the Indians were so good for so long. It didn't have to do with the strength of the lineup. It had to do with the frickin' division.
You just zoomed over that analogy I made. And the White Sox are a lion.
I'm just thinking.
If I were a lion and you were a tuna, I would...
I would freaking go out of my food chain and eat you.
On that note, the White Sox are lions.
They are lying.
In the AL Central.
They're absolutely. Imagine if the Reds played in the AL Central. They win the division every year.
This year.
Those Griffey teams in that AL Central, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have even been close.
Other than
Eric Milton wouldn't have been giving up home runs in Chicago.
Although I read about the 05 White Sox for like a few hours a couple nights ago. And
sounds really profound.
I have newfound respect. Like, more than I had before. I mean, they were a genuinely great team.
More people know about the Astros that year who lost
because they had
Series.
Oswalt, Clemens,
Pettit,
and Bagwell, Brad Lidge in the back end of the bullpen.
And then Bagwell, Biggio, Beltran.
They got swept. They got swept by that Sox team.
Yeesh.
Who in the, anyway, we got
to
get out
of
here.
And the year before that, they gave up that massive home run to Pujols in the playoffs that everyone, it's been on repeat since he signed with the Dodgers. Just over the train tracks. Bang.
Albert. Pujols.
You know, it's really, final comment. Let me tell you something.
You know, this is why we don't do radio.
Because, when there's a 100 loss team in your city and you go to baseball games, and there's a guy on the train trying to pump up a crowd of 250 people. It doesn't work.
No.
Those Astros teams, man.
I love it. I love
Brett Wallace batting third.
I love
Brett Oberholzer throwing one inning, giving up 10 runs.
That's what I love about
it. Was brutal.
You know, because growing up and going to baseball games in Cincinnati, that Sox crowd, like, listen.
They're so into it.
But no, if you're in Cincinnati and it's a bad team and somebody's like, "Let's go, Red Legs." Oh, people will stand up. There's families there. This is one of five games they're going to go to all year. They're cheering. Jose Abreu has a bad at bat. Try to start a "Let's go, White Sox" chant. Like, I don't want to do this. Did you see that? He just swung at two pitches in the dirt. We're down 3-1. Like, I love that.
But then they're up 9-1.
And they're like
standing up.
Everybody wants to do it. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's great.
They're
it's
smart
great.
Baseball fans.
Yes, it's a great time.
Cubs fans are just there for the party.
Yeah.
Just whatever.
Well,
it's time for the party.
I'm going to the party tonight.
Here for the seventh inning.
I'm watching Lester's return tonight.
That's exciting. That's very exciting. Yeah. I have a feeling he will not receive a standing ovation, but we'll see.
I'll stand. It'll count.
That's nice of you. What's the